Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is your show host, Randy Fine. Today we're going to talk about something that is so fundamental that we almost forget we do it, breathing. We have with us international best-selling author Dr. Danny Penman, who is a feature and comment writer for the UK's Daily Mail. After gaining a PhD in biochemistry, he worked for The Independent and the BBC. He is the co-author with Mark Williams of Mindfulness and of the book of The Art of Breathing, which we are going to be reading today. I wanted to read the foreword to this book, which is just, I just think it's awesome, so I'm going to read it to you. Then I'll bring Danny on. Among all the dimensions of life we take for granted or ignore, and there are many, breathing is among the closest to us and the most fundamental. We are always only one breath away from not being able to keep the mystery of this universe comprising trillions of human cells that we somehow think of as me alive. The entire constellation miraculously and unceasingly takes care of itself through breathing over seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years, and decades. What a gift. That's only half of it. There's more, but I don't want to read the whole thing because I really want to talk to our guest. So let me introduce you. We're having a bit of a technical problem with our guest hearing me, so we're going to try to muddle through this. So let me introduce you. Good morning, Danny.
Hello, I can actually hear you properly now.
Good job.
When you need them the least, don't you?
Okay, right down to the second. Oh, that is wonderful. So we're talking today about your book, The Art of Breathing. And I know that you came by this sort of by accident, a real accident. Can you talk about what happened to you?
Yes, about 10 years ago, I was paragliding over a range of hills in southern England. Paragliding was the absolute center of my life. You know, I absolutely loved it. And this one day, I was just flying along the edge of the Cotswolds, and I was hit by the most unbelievable downdraft, which knocked the air out of my paragliding canopy. And I fell head over heels into the hillside below. And luckily, I landed on my feet. But unluckily, the lower half of my right leg was driven through the knee and into my thigh. So it was a really horrible accident. And I was lying there on this hillside with, you know, completely shattered and totally unable to breathe. And I suddenly remembered a form of meditation that I had learned when I was in high school. I was about 16 or 17 years old when I learned it. And somewhere along the line, I'd picked up that meditation was a good form of pain relief. And in absolute sheer desperation, I decided to try this very simple breathing meditation that I'd learned. And I was lying there. I just could not breathe at all. And I just forced myself to relax and to take the first breath. And luckily, I began to breathe again. It was a terrifying experience. And I used this meditation to control the unimaginable pain I was in. I found, much to my surprise, that it did work. And the pain became almost separate from me. You know, after maybe 20 or 30 seconds of using this very simple breathing meditation, it really did begin to diminish. It went down by at least three quarters, I'd say. And it allowed me to keep things together enough to call for an ambulance. And, they eventually arrived. And I was kind of doing this very simple breathing meditation all the way to the hospital. And I spent, I think it was about a month in hospital. And I had fitted to my leg what's known as a Taylor spatial frame, which is this, it looks like a medieval torture device. It consists of four or five concentric steel rings that go around the outside of the leg. And then there were 16 wires and bolts that went from one of these rings into my leg and out to the other side. And it was a way of moving all the fragments of bone around inside my leg. And, this was a very, very kind of painful experience. And I spent a month in hospital, and the surgeon who put me back together said, you know, I could spend maybe 24 months with this device attached to my leg. And I was so surprised by how effective this meditation had been, to help me control the pain initially, that I began to do this meditation more and more. And much to my surprise, it was being very, very effective. I managed to cut down on all of the drugs I was being asked to take. And I could feel my body healing really quite dramatically. And I think it was largely just as a result of the reduction in stress. And because normally in this situation, you were obviously highly stressed, highly anxious, and, not a little bit unhappy, should we say. And I began to do this meditation more and more. And as the days rolled into months and then months, into weeks and then into months, my healing accelerated dramatically, so much so that I had the frame removed from my leg after, I think it was 16 or 17 weeks rather than the 24 months of the doctors.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was, it was a huge change. And the surgeon who fixed my leg, said that this was one of the top five leg injuries he'd dealt with. Mm-hmm. And, he said there was a very real risk that they'd have to amputate the leg. And, he was absolutely astonished that, that I recovered so well. And, in large part, I put it down to this very simple meditation.
So can you share that? Is that something you can share with us?
I can talk you through it. The minimum you'd really want to do would be for 10 minutes at a time, but I'll talk you through it. And you know, it's then you just carry on doing it, in essence.
Okay.
The principle is very simple. You sit down in a straight-backed chair, and with your feet flat on the floor and your hands loosely in your lap, and then gently close your eyes and begin to focus on the breath. Focus on the way the air flows into and out of your body. And wherever the sensations are strongest, just focus your awareness on that, the gentle rising and falling of your shoulders or your chest or your stomach, just as the air flows in and out. And then when you realize that your mind has wandered, just gently escort your awareness back to the sensations of breathing. And if you just continue doing this for 8 or 10 minutes, or longer if you can manage, it has a tremendously calming and soothing effect on the body.
Mm. So, thank you. Thank you. I mean, now that we have the basics, at least we can all try to put it into, you know, into use. So you say in your book, most of us breathe incorrectly. So breathing is such a natural thing for us, but why do we breathe incorrectly? What is it that causes us to not do it right?
Well, there's a great many reasons. I mean, there's a straightforward physical reason that we spend so much time sitting at our desks, and that, you know, that restricts the process of breathing. But the biggest reason really is we are constantly bombarded with messages and Facebook posts and telephone calls and emails and things like that. And what tends to happen, you don't really notice it unless you pay close attention, but each time you're disturbed in that way, your body tenses up very slightly. And this restricts your breathing. So it's like a little tiny moment of stress. And then what happens is, you know, if your chest or stomach tightens up, you begin to, oxygen levels begin to fall just a little tiny bit in your blood. And your brain interprets that as stress. And you tense up a little bit more. You know, you tense, ready for action. That's what stress is, in a way. It's a tensing, a readiness for action. So the oxygen levels will begin to fall a little bit more in your blood. And so you enter this kind of quite, what can become quite a vicious downward spiral where stress triggers more stress, which triggers more stress. And the way of counteracting that is to quite simply take one or two breaths, really deep, gentle breaths. And that kind of resets the process. You then go into a situation where you go into a virtuous circle where your body begins to relax and oxygen levels climb back towards normal. And you begin to quite naturally breathe more naturally. And it stimulates what's known as the parasympathetic nervous system. And this is the calming or the soothing aspect of the nervous system. And this is how you enter this kind of wonderful kind of upward spiral. And if you consciously do a very simple breathing meditation each day, you know, maybe for 10 or 20 minutes, or one of the other practices in my book, The Art of Breathing, you gradually begin to dissolve the stress in your body and your mind, and you enter a kind of a more permanent state of kind of relaxation so that you can cope better with anxiety, stress, and unhappiness. You know, it's a very, very simple mindfulness meditation. Just focusing on the breath is arguably the simplest mindfulness meditation of all. And, you know, mindfulness has been shown now in countless clinical trials to be at least as good as drugs or counseling for the treatment of the worst forms of depression. And it's also very, very effective for anxiety and stress too.
so simple. You know, as we, since I've gotten your book, I've, you know, really been mindful about my breathing. And I realize that I do a lot of shallow breathing. You know,
I realize
most of the time I'm just getting a little bit of oxygen in. And it could be why I don't feel so good all the time. So,
pay attention and realize how, you know, it is entirely normal to breathe badly.
Yeah. You know, I was, I went to a hypnotherapist one time and she taught me prana breathing. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's really nice and puts you into a really nice deep meditation. And it's just using the breath. Have you ever done prana breathing before?
No, I haven't, or at least not so as I know it. I might actually have done it in the past.
You might be doing it. Yeah, it's it was taught by Yogi Bhajan, Bhajan, and it's just gradual and simple, and it's just a timing of the breath where you count a certain amount of seconds in, a certain amount of seconds hold, and a certain amount of seconds out, like 15 each one. Yeah, and then eventually, if you keep doing it, you eventually go into a meditation. So it's very nice. You have in here that you can meditate with fruit.
Yes.
So that's really cute. Can you explain to us what that's about?
Yeah, well, you can actually meditate or become mindful of pretty much any activity, anything you do on a daily basis. In fact, the more mundane the activity, the better it is as a subject for mindfulness meditation. You can use fruit, you can use tea, coffee, chocolate. You know, the important thing is the quality of the awareness you bring to whatever you're doing. So for eating fruit, for example, if you choose your piece of fruit, maybe it's an apple or an orange or a banana or whatever, you know, first of all, begin to peel it and notice all of the textures as you're peeling the fruit, and close your eyes and pay full attention to all of the aromas that are coming off the fruit. And, you know, slowly and steadily just take the first bite and try and see what flavors you can sense, because, you know, fruit has many dozens, whatever the fruit is, it will actually have many dozens of different sub flavors. You know, if it's an apple, for example, you might just consciously peg it as an apple taste, but actually when you really start to pay attention, you know, there's all different types of acids that are in there, from, I don't know, malic acid through to vitamin C, which has a taste, ascorbic acid, all the different fruit sugars that are in there, the textures. When you begin to eat anything mindfully, it is quite an extraordinary experience, and it makes you realize how many different experiences each day that just completely pass you by. You know, the world is a wonderful sensory experience. Everything you do can be really quite wonderful, but you have to pay attention. You know, you have to bring this kind of mindful quality of awareness to these ordinary things, and then you realize just what a wonderful place the world actually is. And this is why mindfulness is such a powerful antidote to anxiety and stress and depression, because it just begins to broaden your awareness and kind of kickstart curiosity. And it really is impossible to be unhappy and curious at the same time, you know? This is why it is so powerful.
So simple and so powerful. I really like that. Oh my gosh, we do so many things in the course of a day that we just even don't even realize. It's I love the way you just described that. so much involved in eating a piece of fruit, but, you know, taking a walk, everything that we do, you know, like I live in South Florida, and before I moved down here, I thought, oh my gosh, to live among palm trees would be the most exotic, unusual thing. Well, once you live here, you don't see them anymore. And so sometimes I just have to go, I have to walk outside, or if I'm driving, I have to say, look at those palm trees, look where I'm living, look at this, you know, this is tropics, because I really don't see them anymore. So it's a very similar kind of thing. So you say that habits kill curiosity. And, you know, I work with people, I do counseling with people who have a certain kind of domestic abuse issue. And a lot of the problem is that grooves have been formed in from old ways of thinking, old ways of programming. And so you actually talk about this in your book, that half of your life is ruled by habit. So can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yes. I mean, the mind is a wonderful machine for compressing the things that we do on a daily basis into habits, so that we no longer have to think. You know, imagine what it would be like. Think back to the first time you drove a car or automobile, how difficult and terrifying it was. And now you do it completely automatically. And that is a fine example of the way the brain can take something that is phenomenally complicated and turn it into something that you can do without a moment's thought, really. Trouble is, the mind does that to everything. It is always looking for shortcuts. And, you know, it means that pretty much everything we do can be very quickly and easily turned into a habit that you can do without a second's thought. But in practice, that means that by the time you are, I don't know, 10, 12 years old, you have learned to automate most of your daily life. By the time you get to your early to mid-20s, your life is pretty much one endless stream of interlinked habits. And it means that you can just pass through whole days barely noticing anything at all. It's only when you go somewhere completely different on holiday or move to Florida and start noticing all the palm trees that you begin to realize that actually, you know, you're living your life as a series of habits. And you know, so what starts off as an absolutely fantastic mental saving or, you know, device for saving mental effort turns into a gilded cage really quite quickly. And so what mindfulness does, and hopefully many of the practices in my book, is, well, first of all, it reveals that process to you because we just all slip into it subconsciously. And then once it's revealed to you, you can begin to take action, you know, so that you stop living as a machine, as it were. And you know, that this is the great power of mindfulness. It helps you see this process as it happens, and then it gives you the you know, the ability to step back from it and begin to make contact with your life again.
So true. It's so, you know, I love hearing this. And my listeners, most of my listeners are suffering from this form of brainwashing and programming that they just, you know, and what we work on is learning to be mindful of what it is and changing to forming different grooves in the mind. And I love being able to do it with the breath. I think that's very simplistic and the mindfulness. So, you know, I may incorporate that, if you don't mind, into some of my counseling. I think I saw in your book that you say you're not a spiritual person, okay? Am I right when I say that?
Yes. I mean, I think that's broadly true. I mean, I suppose what I mean is, I was trying to emphasize that I'm a very, very practical, down-to-earth person. You know, I'm more interested in providing solutions to problems rather than you know, kind of getting spiritual guidance, because I think there's lots of very good mindfulness books out there that, you know, come at things from a spiritual dimension. That's perfectly valid. I wouldn't argue against it. But I think it's also very important that people who are kind of more practical can have access to these techniques, and they'll only do that if they see it as, you know, something that's kind of down to earth and practical rather than being spiritual.
Okay. And I ask you that question because some people that I work with are, some people that I counsel are spiritual and others are not. And I just wanted to bring that broad perspective to everyone for those, you know, because, and I try to be as broad as I can. Sometimes I get caught up in these things and I start talking in terms of my spiritual beliefs, and I've been called on it by a few of my clients. So, you know, I just wanted to show that this is a mindfulness exercise, and it seems like something very new age. And maybe it is, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it is spiritual. So I wanted to emphasize that, and I think that was an important point. So thank you for, you know, sharing your perspective on that. What you talk about, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, it's not that I'm not, I mean, I do make the point that, you know, I'm as spiritual as a house brick. But, you know, it really is just, you know, I have my spiritual moments, but, you know, I used to be a scientist before I came to all this, and I'm just aware that, you know, for many people, you have to win the scientific arguments. It's not enough to say it's really good to be kind to each other for a change and to yourself, because we kind of all know that. But I think it's important that people realize there's actually a huge scientific reasons, you know, there's a huge evidence base for all of these techniques, and, you know, so if you're not spiritual, that doesn't matter. You don't need to be spiritual or religious to be mindfulness.
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you. I appreciate that. Like I said, that point of view. So you talk about, let's see, you talk about embodied cognition. What is that?
Yes. This is the idea. We all think that, you know, we think with our brains, and we certainly do, but we also think with our bodies as well. You know, it's a mistake really to think that the mind and body are separate entities, because they are intimately linked. You know, they are kind of obviously inseparable. And, you know, the more people study this, you know, the way that the body affects the mind, the more profound the links become. You know, just something as simple as the way you sit has a profound impact on, you know, your state of mind. It sounds a bit crazy, but, you know, if you hold yourself you know, upright in a kind of calm but relaxed posture, you will be more confident in your beliefs, and your emotions will be more positive, and your thoughts, you know, your conscious thoughts will be more positive than if you are slumped at your desk. And yeah, there's an awful lot of experiments to prove this now. And, you know, the classic example was a group of students were asked to put a pencil, hold a pencil between their teeth. And this kind of forced them to kind of mimic a smile. You know, if you can think of a circus clown with a forced smile. Now, they actually found jokes funnier than people who were forced to frown. That sounds absolutely ridiculous, that if you are forced to frown, you will find a joke less funny than somebody who is forced to smile. But, you know, it is absolutely true. And, you know, in countless areas, you know, our body has been shown to drive our thoughts. So,
are you there? Okay.
I use these techniques myself on a daily basis. You know, if I'm feeling, you know, a little bit tired or a little bit under the weather, for example, you know, I will consciously lift myself up and have a more confident posture, you know, a more energized posture. And really very quickly, my state of mind will change. And, you know, try it for yourself. You know, when this program is over, just slump at your desk or in, you know, wherever you're sitting, and you will feel your spirits begin to sag. And if you consciously adopt a more confident, happy pose and seating position, your thoughts will begin to lift.
Hmm. What do you know? Do you know what yawning is about?
No, but it's funny. I've read quite a few articles about this because people often ask this question, including many scientists, and nobody quite knows.
They don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just thought maybe it was all intertwined with this. Probably it is, but they just don't know yet. In Chapter 8, in Insightfulness, this is so interesting because you talk about how our planet breathes, and I like the way you elaborate on this. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I mean, we all tend to think that it's only us animals that breathe. But actually, when you broaden your perspective, absolutely everything breathes in some way. And what I love is that if you go into space and look back at planet Earth, you can actually see the whole planet breathing through the year. And, you know, it begins in early spring, when the great forests and grasslands of the northern hemisphere start to grow, you know, when the sun starts to get stronger in the late spring, the great forests and grasslands of the northern hemisphere begin to photosynthesize. They produced unimaginable quantities of oxygen, and they start sucking in massive quantities of planet begins to breathe in. And then as the summer progresses, the whole process goes into reverse. You know, the whole planet begins to take a huge outbreath, the huge quantities of carbon dioxide begin to be emitted by the forests and grasslands. And, you know, you can see a radical change in the composition of the atmosphere through the year. So it is like a breath. And there's a wonderful video that you'll find on my website produced by NASA, where they actually show this process in, you know, as it progresses. They compress it through the year so that you can see the whole of our wonderful planet breathing through the year. And if you go and have a look at franticworld.com, you'll see that. I think it's franticworld.com/AOB, as in art of breathing.
And that's your website, right? Franticworld.com is your website. Okay.
Yes. And I just, you know, I watch this video all the time because it just shows how similar we all are. You know, not just the animals of this wonderful planet, but the planet itself. And, you know, even the universe, in a sense, breathes. Because, you know, our sun was formed, like all stars, billions upon billions of years ago. And they were formed in a giant in-breath. As you can imagine, these vast... they gradually begin to sink inward towards each other under the force of gravity. And they get hotter and hotter and hotter, and they get more and more compressed. So it's like a giant in-breath. And then the sun or the star begins to burn. You know, it's a nuclear fusion reaction. And it stays that way for billions upon billions of years. And it's like a pause between the in-breath and then the out-breath. And the out-breath is when the star just explodes in a supernova. So you get this unbelievably massive out-breath that just throws all of the material that it's been fusing for billions upon billions of years. So all those kind of metals like iron and lithium and potassium that are necessary for life, and carbon and oxygen and nitrogen, all of the elements that are necessary for life to form and evolve are just produced inside the stars, and then in a huge outbreath they're just thrown out into the universe and then incorporated into planets. So the universe itself is kind of breathing in and out constantly.
Fascinating. It's really cool how you bring science and mindfulness together. What do you think about quantum science? Have you embraced that?
Yeah, I mean, this is an area that I just I just love.
Okay.
The fact that, one interpretation of quantum mechanics, in fact, the most accepted version of quantum mechanics says that, nothing is really real until a conscious observer is actually looking at it and paying attention. That's the Copenhagen interpretation, as it's known. That's the orthodox interpretation of quantum physics. And, it's in many ways, I'm absolutely fascinated by quantum physics, but actually, that this whole area is evolving in quite an amazing way. This kind of information theory, because quantum physics is the most exhaustively investigated theory of physics, of all time. And there's just some niggling little doubts there, because it's so counterintuitive that people are constantly exploring alternatives and they're constantly finding actually quantum physics seems to be by far the most accurate description of physics and the world we live in. And it's something that, I think when we start to live in a post-quantum physics world, that's when it's going to get very, very interesting.
I wanted to hear your perspective, as someone going from a scientific background to something like quantum physics, because it's very different. But I do believe it is the new science that will eventually, it'll be our new reality of what is true, right?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that it is the best, most accurate description of the physical world as we know it. But what I think is fascinating about it is that when you start to tease physics apart, when you start to tease matter and energy apart, there doesn't seem to be anything there. and this is where information theory comes in, because it seems as if we are not living in a physical universe. There is the possibility, this sounds completely crazy, that we are actually living in a simulation, for example. What could be hosting that simulation? Nobody has a clue. there's some very serious physicists and mathematicians who are working in this area. I mean, I've interviewed a couple of people at Oxford University, for example, like Nick Bostrom, who's a mathematical physicist, and his life's work is looking at the idea that we are living inside a simulation. And he doesn't say this is true, but all the evidence says that this is the most likely explanation. Which is completely crazy.
Well,
I would like to be around in a few hundred years when a lot of these questions, they may not be settled completely, but we will be living in very interesting times, I think.
I think so too. I really do.
Yeah. Not that the present world is uninteresting, but I'm very impatient to see what's coming next.
Yeah, it's exciting to know what's coming. There's I watched a show I don't know if they have it in the UK. It's just started here, called The Crossing, and people are have come from another 100 years in the future. They're trying to get away from some kind of oppression, and they all end up in the current time. In the ocean, some of them drown and some of them, but it's very cool. It's a very cool concept. So I've been really, it just started. So there's, we have a little bit more. Let me just first say to my listeners that The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully, it's a small little blue book, but it is so beautiful. The whole book is illustrated. And I'm somewhat of an artist, so I really appreciate that. Every page you look at is just something's on there that is really, really beautiful. lot of illustration, a lot of line drawings and stuff like that. So did you do that yourself, Danny?
There was an artist who was brought in, and you know, we kind of worked together on it, really, because I had the concept in my head. But you need, so I had the words and I had the concept, but it's only when you sit down with somebody who can actually, you know, wield a pencil, you can kind
yes.
of, you evolve something between you.
Yeah, there's a talent. Well, it came together brilliantly, so kudos to you for that. So we are running out of time, but is there anything that you wanted to say that maybe we didn't cover? I know we covered pretty much most of the book.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the reason I wrote the Art of Breathing is my main book previous to this was mindfulness, finding peace in a frantic world, and yeah, it sold, I think it's about 1 million copies now. I mean,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's done. I mean, it took us completely by surprise because we.
Congratulations on that. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we were, you know, we thought it was a book that needed to be written, so wrote it, and you know, without any, we wanted it to be a success, but we were, you know, slightly taken aback by how many it has sold. But I still felt that we hadn't actually reached a great many people who really needed mindfulness, and so. That's what The Art of Breathing is, really. You know, it is, I hope, the smallest, simplest mindfulness book in the world, I hope. And
yeah, it is. It's so, it's something that, you know, you can pretty much get through, you know, in a few hours, but then you want to go back and use the meditations
yeah.
and the things that you say. So I have to say goodbye. We're running out of time, but it's been absolutely wonderful having you. I thank you for
yeah.
being my guest today and all this beautiful information you've shared with us today.
Okay. Anything else, you know, just, yeah, let me know and I'll try to help.
Okay.
Thank
you,
very
you
much
so much.
Time.
Have a wonderful day. I've
thank
enjoyed.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.